Okay, so this is just really going to be a quick presentation on some of the new features in Chimera for looking at maps. It'll mostly be a demonstration, and we'll look at masking, a little bit of trickery for making publication images, and morphing between maps. I think most of you are familiar with Chimera, but for the few who maybe haven't tried it, I'll give a quick introduction. So Chimera does interactive visualization, and most of its capabilities are for looking at atomic models, PDB, basically PDB files, and also looking, and then a bunch of capabilities for looking at density maps. One of the particularly strong areas in looking at atomic models are looking at them in conjunction with sequences and multiple sequence alignments. And one of the new things we're working on now are dendrograms that go along with these multiple sequence alignments. And you don't need structures with these sequences. You might map conservation onto the atomic model. Another recent development is morphing. Ed Engelman, I think, in general, showed better applications of Chimera than I'm going to show you. Kind of embarrassing. So morphing between different conformations of atomic models, this sort of thing. This image also shows this black edge outline. It's just something for publication type images, just to make a better image with better appearance. Chimera can work with large molecular assemblies like this Clathrin cage. And then the stuff we're going to really look at today is map visualization. And Chimera is used for looking at maps at different resolutions, crystallography, single particle EM. And a lot of my efforts now are to add functionality for looking at tomography. Okay, but today what I'm going to show you is the single particle, the features oriented towards single particle reconstructions. I tried to incorporate in some of these images some of the newer features. In this single particle map, this is a ray-traced image. So PovRay is now included in Chimera. That was added about 6 months ago. That can give you shadows and glossy, better lighting on maps. Okay, so... It can be very slow. It depends how complex your surface is. If you add transparency on the flight down here just a few hours ago, I thought, oh, I'll make a PovRay image with transparency, and the whole hour of the flight down from San Francisco, it didn't finish the nice image. And then it looked horrible, too. So doing the ray tracing is kind of dicey. Some things are very fast. I ray traced this one in, I don't know, 5 seconds. Didn't have transparency. It's a small map. Okay, so Chimera is free. It runs on all the common desktop operating systems, Windows, Mac, Linux. In the last 6 months or so, we got some scripts going to build Chimera every night in the past. We've made production releases every 6 months, but we add a lot of new features. So most of the things I'll show you aren't in the Chimera release from June, about 5 months ago. They are in a release that's about to come out later this week. But at any time, you might want to get the nightly builds. They've been pretty stable, and you get all the latest features. We're able to add a lot of features because we have 5 developers working on the program, and that helps us provide pretty good user support, too. Here's a picture of the group. It's headed by Tom Farron. Conrad Huang heads the Chimera project, and the other developers are Greg, Elaine, and Eric. Information about the kind of map capabilities I'm going to show you, the best source, I think we have pretty good documentation. The best source is this guide to volume data display. And if you go to the Chimera homepage and just go to that, you can find that just by searching for Chimera in Google. Then over here on the left, here it is, this guide to volume data display. This is kind of how-to documentation. It has images of a bunch of common things you do with maps. And for each one of them, there are a few paragraphs describing how you would do this task. So if I go here for selecting subregions, it tells you what menu entries, what buttons to press to extract a subregion. And there's a link, this details link, that goes into our user's guide, which contains all the nitty-gritty details about what every button does. But I suggest looking here first, because it gives you a simpler recipe for doing things. All right, so that's it for the intro. And now I'd like to spend the rest of the time doing a demonstration of this masking and morphing and publication image stuff. We'll look at a data set of phage K1E. This is a phage infects E. coli strain K1. And I chose this just browsing through the EM data bank and looked for a recent entry, something fairly recent, recently deposited. Okay, so I'll switch to Chimera now. I'll start up our release candidate that just came out this week. And open this 9-angstrom map of phage K1E. Okay, so the first thing I want to do here. Oh, it's funny looking at it on my screen. It's stretched out wide. is I'm going to try to separate the capsid layer, the protein layer, from the double-stranded DNA packaged inside. Okay, so it's a segmentation task. And so let me show you the layered structure. I'll switch to, or I'll bring up this panel to display planes. And we'll just show planes, and I can flip through the different planes. A bunch of these things I added really for tomogram use, but they obviously have use too for single particle reconstructions. I can adjust the brightness. All right, so we're going to try to, you can see clearly the protein capsid and then the concentric layers of its double-stranded DNA. And we're going to try to separate out that protein layer and the DNA, all the rest, into two separate maps. Let me switch to a surface rendering. First thing, we're looking at a single plane. I'm going to switch to 10 planes and switch to surface display style and raise the contouring level. Okay. Maybe we'll go to a more central plane. So if we look at this surface representation, you can see the layers are very distinct. It looks like, in fact, there's no connection. And I'll bring up a little tool that will just color the components, the connected components, to show you that, in fact, they aren't connected at this threshold level. This tool is called Pick Surface Pieces, and it lets me just click. So I'll click on the protein layer here. Actually, take a few seconds. It's newly added and needs a little optimization. So it colored it blue. It's told me its volume and its area. The volume could be useful if you're looking at a component of a structure of known molecular weight. You want to see if that volume matches the expected molecular weight. I can change the color. Let me just color a few more layers. And so we do that. So these things, none of these are connected. And it looks like a simple way for perhaps segmenting the data into the separate shells. The thing is, we're looking at a very thin slab here. And if we look at the whole capsid, even at this threshold level, there are little filaments that connect the different layers. And so just this pure connectivity doesn't work so well. So for separating this into the two maps, I'm going to try a different approach. I'm going to try to place a surface between the protein capsid and the DNA and use that surface to separate the volume. The way I'm going to get that surface is I need it to match very well the shape of the virus, so I'm just going to smooth the actual data with a Gaussian convolution, and that will give me a surface that will help me divide the layers. Okay, so let me bring up a tool, this Gaussian filter tool, to do the Gaussian convolution. I'm going to make it played around with it earlier, 50 angstroms, standard deviation, works pretty well. That's the width of the Gaussian. There's some options here. Do I want to do the Gaussian convolution on just this region? No, I actually want the whole thing, the whole virus particle, so let me turn that off. The map here is about 300 cubed, and this Gaussian filtering is going to do a few Fourier transforms, and it would have to up that to 512 cubed, and we'd be waiting 30 seconds or so. So I'm going to actually reduce the sampling to every other pixel and tell the Gaussian filtering to only use that reduced sampling just to make it a little quicker. Okay, it hid the original map. Let me bring that back. Let me color this Gaussian smooth version so it's easy to distinguish. And now, if I just change the threshold level, okay, this is just a contour surface of the Gaussian map, I've got a good approximation to the average shape of this virus. And I could try to place it to separate the DNA from the capsid. Does a fairly good job. If I change the plane I'm looking at, let's do it on the right map. Put the step back up to 1. So I've raised it a little bit so I see some of the fivefold vertices, and you can see some of the density sticks out here. So the surface is not a perfect match, and this technique I'm using is not going to give us a perfect separation. Okay, if you really needed a better result, you would probably go into some program like iMod or Amira and plane by plane have to separate these out. Okay. But this is not too bad, at least in this case. And so what I'll do now is, execute this command that actually masks to this surface. This is a new command I added a few months ago. Before I do that, how about I show the interior, just show the surface's meshes. And the command's called mask. Tell it the volume, we give it the number corresponding to the volume, it's number 0, and the surface, well, that's number 1, model number 1. And if we do that, it will give me just the density inside that surface. Okay? I'm really more interested in the density of the capsid, so let me go back and get that. Bring back the original maps. I added this mask command just a few months ago, and it's in development. It's in the current release on the web, the release candidate of Chimera that's on the web. But there's an option, pretty important one, to say, mask, give me everything outside the surface, not inside. Well, I don't have that option yet. So we have to resort to a little trickery. I'm going to add a second contour level for the Gaussian surface. I do that by clicking here on the histogram. Here I'll make it a different color so you see it better. Okay, and the mask command can give me what's between the two surfaces. In fact, the very same command will now give me what's between those two contour surfaces. Okay. And actually, let me just show you inside, really. The DNA density has been removed. I just bring up a clipping plane here. And so the density inside is gone. Okay, so let me just put this together, make an image of the two maps we have. We got the capsid. Let me show just part of that. At full resolution, say 100 planes. Okay. You can see artifacts inside of the masking, those concentric rings. And let me bring back, question? Let me bring back the, actually, let me do a little coloring here. Say that. DNA isn't so interesting. Okay, it's been icosahedrally averaged, so I'm just seeing the shells. But the authors of this did a reconstruction without the icosahedral, imposing the icosahedral symmetry, so you can actually see some of the DNA structure. That's another map, and I can do the same kind of masking on that map. I've already done that, and I saved the masked packaged DNA. Let me just open that map because it's a little more interesting. And I'll hide the actual map. Since we don't have the icosahedral symmetry, it's lower resolution. There are multiple layers of DNA that we see, and to hide the inner layers, let me just use my surface from the Gaussian smoothing. Let me make that a solid surface. Okay. The authors of the study believe that these strands actually that you see are the double strands of DNA spirally wound. So it's kind of interesting to see. All right, so that's masking. What I'd like to do in this next part is show you something about how to make images for article or presentation, publication type images that show depth, that give you a good sense of depth. So let me get rid of these masking volumes and let me show the full. Show the full capsid, and we'll just show a few ways to render it to try to get a good sense of the depth. Okay, so I just adjust the threshold level, show the full capsid at the full resolution. So an image like this, you get very little sense of which features are raised and which features are lower, like the canyons and things that are projecting out. And the typical solution is to use color by according to radius. So let me do that. Use this surface color tool, and I'll say color the capsid according to radius, say from red to blue, and fill in a set of radii for this surface and color. Okay. Okay. Curious, it just doesn't look very little red there. What you see here is the fivefold vertices are further out in radius, no big surprise there. Threefold axes are lower. Let's see, I'm just curious why. Okay. I don't know why we don't see too much red. It has to do with the range of data values that are used for the coloring here. So this is a typical kind of coloring that gives you a sense of depth in a static image. You can't rotate the thing around. Another variant of this, you might be interested in how far the features project above the surface, above the average surface, not just the absolute distance from the center. And we can use this Gaussian smooth surface that I used for the masking to achieve that. Let me just show that surface once again. So I can color and use as a measure how high you are above this surface. Okay. In fact, I'm not going to color by the actual distance, the heights. I'm going to color just by the values of this Gaussian map. So let me do that. Same tool here. We just say color using the Gaussian smooth map, maybe change some other color scheme, set appropriate range of values. We'll do that. Okay, so here the fivefold vertices don't appear pronounced, okay, because we're just measuring how far we are above that average surface. You see at the center of these hexamers and the pentamers you see in red, those are the features that are actually projecting highest above the average surface. this phage, the capsid, is largely one protein, all the green and yellow, but there's an accessory protein that decorates these sites that are shown in red here. So this kind of image might be useful if you wanted to highlight the location of that protein. Uh-huh. So it's not strictly the distance. It's mapping. It's looking at the surface at each surface position, the value of the Gaussian smooth map. Okay, so it's looking. It's looking at the contour level of the Gaussian that, and the ones further out are being colored, well, red in this case. And, yeah. So I don't have a strict mapping from color to like distance from that average surface. If you're limited to having a black and white image, you can do similar kind of thing. So let me just reduce this to two colors, say make it black and white. I want the things that are high up to be white, so let me reverse these colors. Reverse the white and black. Do that. Let me set the range, take a little bit of fiddling around to find an appropriate range to get good contrast, but I've already done that, of course. So let me just choose some value. This kind of coloring, it's something you're familiar with from sort of everyday life looking at things. You've got ambient light coming from all directions, and areas like cavities that don't see much of that ambient light are dark, okay? And areas that are exposed to light from all directions would appear light. The technical term for it in the like graphics parlance is ambient occlusion. Okay, things in the canyons don't get light. This is kind of like we kind of achieve that effect. Only one flaw of it. If I zoom in here, we've got all these bright speckles in the dark region, and that has to do with the shininess of the surface. If I decrease the shininess, it will give me more of that illusion of the recessed areas appearing dark. So let me bring up a tool that lets me control the shininess of the surface. You can control shininess. And if I reduce the shine, I can increase it, increases those white highlights. But I'll decrease it to a low value. Okay, so what we get here is not as good as the color version, but sometimes you either don't want to or don't have the choice to use the color. If I go back to our uncolored version, this versus this, you can see more of the depth. Okay. All right. Last part of the demonstration, I want to show you one more feature, one more capability, that is morphing between maps. Okay, they might represent similar conformations. In the case I'm going to show you, it's actually different strains of this virus. And the idea is to animate, do a linear interpolation, basically, between the two maps, and just contour each of the intermediate maps. Ed Egelman showed this kind of thing better than I'm going to show it, fortunately. Very often in your EM studies, you're doing this. You're looking at, you've got more than one map. You've got your ATPase with ATP bound and without. And this is a good way to see the differences in the map. It doesn't explain the transformation that actually is occurring, but it visually gives you a good sense of what the differences are. All right. For this part, we'll look at the tails of this phage. It's a tailed phage. Let me close these guys and bring up the tail structure that was computed from the map that wasn't icosahedrally averaged. Typically, you want to set some threshold. If you're doing publication talk, you want to be able to explain what threshold you used. You say, I put it one standard deviation above the mean. Let me just show you how to do that in Chimera. If I go to tools, I can have it tell me the mean and standard deviation of this map. And it reports it in this reply log, also at the status line. Maybe it's hard to see there. Anyways, the mean is very close to 0. Standard deviation is close to 1. So this is already normalized. the map is normalized. Usually they aren't. For mean close to zero and standard deviation close to one. So I can go here and set the contouring level to one if I want one standard deviation above the mean. And let me bring up the second map. This is a phage K15, different strain infects E. coli strain K1 and strain K5. That's where the name K15 comes from. And it has a big difference. There's an additional enzyme. That enzyme allows it to degrade the polysaccharide coat of the K5 strain of E. coli. The K5 strain of E. coli has different polysaccharides than K1. We can, of course, superimpose the maps, and I could use a mesh display and try to show you the differences that way. But using an animation makes these differences really clear. So let me bring up that tool called Morph Map. The original code for this was written by Wei Zhang in Paul Penchek's lab about, 8 or 9 months ago for Chimera. And I've just included it, had to do a bit of rewriting, included it in Chimera. So I'll say first map is the K1E tail, K15 tail. And if we just press play, it's going to do this linear interpolation between the maps and just produce new contour surfaces. It helps if that those changes are pretty fast for getting a sense of the differences. It's going as fast as it can on this machine. If I reduce the step size, it can go a bit faster. And not a really great example, but you get the idea. You might notice, so if I bring this slider all the way to the left, we're looking at the K1E tail, and on the right, it's the K15 tail. And you see that the section of the capsid at the bottom has a lot of holes in it on the K15 map and not on the K1E map. This is probably because the maps aren't normalized in the same way. If we look at the standard deviation of that K15 map, its standard deviation isn't 1, it's 0.8 or so. In any case, you often have this situation that the maps aren't normalized the same. To correct for that, there's an option here to multiply the second map by some scale factor. Okay, so if I multiply the second map by 1.5, turn that on, this isn't necessarily the correct factor, but at least we're getting the density isn't disappearing in the capsid here. Okay, I think that's it. That's about all I have time to demonstrate, and I can take questions. Kathy?
Can you align two maps together? I mean, when you brought those up, they were superimposed already.
Yeah, I could. There's a tool that fits one map in another map by maximizing the overlap, slightly different from the correlation, but it will report the correlation coefficient. Unfortunately, this morphing tool wants the data to be on the same grid. Okay, it's just point-wise doing a linear interpolation. Okay, so if you have to align them, if you have to move one of them to align them, then you need to resample that map on so they're on a common grid. And there's a capability to do that resampling in Chimera. That's another new capability I didn't have time to show, but it's in that volume guide instructions on how to do that.